Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I spent $40,000 on shoes.
What's the matter, Morty?
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
No, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to yet another Every Outfit podcast episode. Chel, we just keep going.
When will we stop?
Some people would say not soon enough.
Yeah, I did a quick scan of Project 2025 and it very specifically barred us from podcasting.
I can't wait to be barefoot and pregnant.
Same.
Traditional family values? You know what? Fine. I don't want to work.
Yeah, who ever thought that women should work? What a terrible idea.
You and I saw Maxine last night, which we'll get into. But this morning, Paul was like, oh, I used your Scarlett, which is what we use to record, to play guitar. And I forget which microphone outputs to put in. And I was like, wow, is it starting already? It's like, you shouldn't use your Scarlett to record the podcast. It's for me and my hobbies.
What else is new?
I swear that this is the last week I will talk about the wedding on the podcast, but it feels like it bears mentioning that it was in the New York Times.
I know. I was upstate visiting my parents when it came out, and I was so happy to go to the one store there that sells the New York Times and pick up my very own hard copy.
That's right, baby. Well, I was unprepared that it dropped online Friday. I'm like, oh, it'll drop online probably the day before, but no. Boom. Friday. And more images than I was expecting.
I love that the New York Times doesn't allow comments on people's weddings because people would be too fucking mean.
You know what? For my sanity, I was happy for that. But yes, on Sunday, it was in the style section. My dad, of course, picked up several copies. He's like, how many do you want? And it's like, how many do we need, actually?
I think you need like 2.
That's what I'm thinking. But my dad was like, wow, did you know it was going to be this much of a big deal? I was like, kind of, yeah. I mean, we did sit for like collectively an hour and a half of interviews with the writer Caitlin Menza, who listens to the podcast, reached out, wrote a beautiful profile, which I should say that I had my, not doubts, but I was like, what if it is a hit piece? Like, what if it was like Married and Fabulous question mark?
Okay, well, I know that the style section is notoriously cunty, and I mean that in the most complimentary way, but the wedding section is never like that.
I know.
I had fun talking to her as well. I told her all of your dirty little secrets.
And she published none of them. Thank you again to Caitlin for, one, reaching out with the sweetest email months ago that was like, I'm sure your wedding has already been placed, but if not, like, would you consider allowing me to write a story or pitching this wedding? And I was like, oh, no, it is definitely not placed anywhere. I've heard from people who've tried to get their weddings in Vogue that the whole thing with Vogue is that they won't say yes until they've seen the images.
Kind of fair.
I guess so. I mean, that does make sense, but rough.
Because Vogue is all about, like, how glamorous is this event and, like, how hot are the people getting married. I feel like New York Times is slightly more inclusive.
It's more the normies. It's not about how many celebrities showed up to your wedding.
Yeah, exactly. You can be not an influencer or some sort of fashion industry person and have your wedding covered in the New York Times.
The article was fabulous. I love all the quotes you gave. I do realize in reading the article upon retrospect, my mother is not mentioned at all in this article because I didn't mention her and she's in none of the photos. And so my mom was like, there is a part of the article where you talk about one of the reasons you actually wanted to have a wedding was I had lost family members and friends over the pandemic and I wanted to bring people together. And my mom was like, I hope people don't think that I'm dead because I'm not mentioned at all. And you've talked about family members dying. So I just wanted to be known, guys, my mom is not dead.
Not dead. And she looked just stunning in her Armani dress at your wedding, I have to say. A real fashion highlight of the night.
My mom, of course, has ultimate bragging rights for weeks to come with her Mahjong group.
Okay, also, Tad and I posted a photo of us from the wedding and multiple people commented, I thought this was Katie and Ariana from Vanderpump Rules. Of reference that I did not understand as I do not watch that show, but when I Googled them, I died laughing.
It's kind of rude.
It's funny because we don't actually look like that and we don't normally look like that, but I can see how someone could just glance at that and have a moment.
One of the few reality shows I don't watch, especially in the Bravo universe, is Vanderpump. But I do know that Ariana and Katie started a sandwich shop called Something About Her in West Hollywood, which, should we go now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or should you and Tack go and see if people think you're them?
Which one has brown hair and, like, pulls an occasional menswear look?
I believe Katie.
I gotta know who is who.
You're evidently the one that got cheated on. You're the one that's on the other side of the scandal.
Right. Okay.
I'm surprised that no one in WeHo, when you've gone to Bottega Louie, has been like, you were great on Dancing with the Stars.
Okay. To clarify, I actually look nothing like this woman.
You don't. It's the weirdest comparison. A little peek behind the pod. On Sunday, we were like, okay, we're going to post it. There was a conversation about, like, what photos are we including and, like, how do we want to photograph the paper? And we were all set to go. And then I lost all internet at my household. You were somewhere that didn't have great internet. And then Biden dropped out of the presidential race. And we were like, oh, maybe wait a couple hours to post.
Yeah, I love how this insane election cycle will just not let you have your moment.
I feel like it's made my wedding more memorable.
It's made your wedding more historic, certainly. Like, it would have been more major if your wedding was in the paper where Biden stepped down. It was just off by hours.
That's true. It more just fucked up our Instagram posting. I don't think this exactly comes as a surprise, right? There were reports starting late last week that Biden would be making this announcement that he was stepping down over the weekend. I think what wasn't known, because what these reports were also saying, was that he wasn't going to give his support to anyone in particular. So the fact that there was this announcement and he didn't endorse anyone else, but then 30 minutes later, he threw his endorsement behind Kamala Harris.
See, I think that's sad. Like, he couldn't even have a full hour that was about him, his legacy, all of that. He has to immediately endorse.
Well, we need those donation dollars, baby.
I know. The weirdly smooth transition between Biden and Harris really reminded me of something, and that thing is the Chromatica 2 into 911 transition. It went from being very somber to being at, like, the club.
Yeah, I am fascinated by, like, the meme effect of Kamala. Like, the fact that it's gone from cringe to meme queen in just the matter of 2 weeks.
People are really getting behind her to a level that I did not anticipate.
I know, but it's like the coconut tree thing. Everyone was making fun of her for the better part of a year. And then, like, 2 weeks ago on TikTok, everything just shifted where I was seeing the coconut tree meme with, like, Grateful Dead-esque graphics and then like Gregorian chant music as if it was the most profound thing, that it feels like all of this was preordained, but I think it's just like two parallel paths that are converging.
Yeah, but were people even really making fun of her with the coconut tree thing? It was a bit eccentric, sure.
Up until this week, I didn't really know the origin of the coconut meme, and it comes from a Twitter account called RNC Research, which seems to be dedicated to owning the libs. This is something that Harris said on May 10th, 2023, during a swearing-in ceremony for commissioners of the White House Initiative on Advancing Educational Equity, Excellence, and Economic Opportunity for Hispanics. And so the full quote is this, because she was discussing how you can better support Hispanic students, and that meant supporting their parents and grandparents. So she says, "My mother, she would give us a hard time sometimes, and she would say to us, 'I don't know what's wrong with you young people. You think you just fell out of a coconut tree. You exist in the context of all in which you live and what came before you.'"
She's not wrong. This is a correct read.
For whatever reason, the internet has attached itself to the formerly kooky things that she said, and somehow she's come out the other side as brat.
It has been truly wild seeing the convergence of the coconut tree and the brat of it all.
And it's also led to 5 days of Jake Tapper and various CNN and MSNBC reporters having to explain what Charlie XCX is to fellow boomers.
Yeah, the mainstreaming of brat has been a really bizarre thing to watch.
Well, also, Charlie XCX tweeted, "Kamala is brat." So it's co-signed by the creator of Brat Summer.
As I understand it, the definition of brat is being kind of a bitch and doing drugs. And I don't know if Kamala is doing, like, ketamine on the weekends, you know? Like, I feel like drug use actually is part of it.
But I think the things that she has said are brat. Like, I think the most mundane thing she said that I've agreed with was, there's some video of her talking about, like, we need to ban plastic straws, but also paper straws aren't giving. And I was like, yes.
Yes, can we have a more nuanced conversation about paper straws?
Like, abortion, shmabortion, but, like, let's fix these paper straws.
We should be able to state the obvious fact that they fucking suck without being perceived as people who don't care about the environment. Like, two things can be true.
Every time I'm at a coffee shop drinking an iced latte with a paper straw that completely collapses in on itself after a few minutes, I'm like, so Kylie Jenner can take a private jet from Calabasas to Palm Springs and I'm stuck with this shitty straw.
I know, it's not fair.
I think it bears mentioning that with the mainstreamization of Brat Summer, that I think Brat Summer's officially over.
Who knows what Charlie has up her sleeve? Because if there's one thing that I know about Brat Summer is that the vibe can shift dramatically from week to week.
I don't know. You know, when I receive a text message from my mother being like, "What was the Charlie song you played me, Von Dutch?"
Kathy should not know what Von Dutch is.
Kathy's having a brat summer. Let her be. Look, when the boomers are having brat summers, we have to let it be.
To what extent is Kamala going to engage with Brat Summer? Is she going to do a TikTok video of her doing the apple dance? I think that would be unwise, but it could happen. I feel like she would be better off not directly acknowledging it, but doing brat dog whistles. Like, if she just wore a collarless pantsuit that was brat green, no mention of Charlie, the internet would just run with it.
See, that makes me nervous because I don't think enough people have spoken about how brat green is also the green screen color. And I'm afraid that if she wears a green screen colored suit, what this RNC research account is going to do with her image.
But we just need one photo of her getting off of the jet in the brat green pantsuit. Or she could take it really far. She could do another boiler room in a swing state. She could hop on the mic and do the bump in that part of 365.
Oh, that Kamala will join Charlie at a Iowa boiler room set in a barn? Having said all of this, I cannot stress this enough to the Kamala Harris team. Do not make coconut tree shirts, okay? Leave the meme alone. That is what Etsy sellers are for.
Because look, merch is not her strong suit. We saw the Pride flag merch that came out over the summer. That was a disaster. She did rebound when she made an appearance in Provincetown during Bear Week, but still, not the strongest merch. I'm not confident that the coconut tree concept would be translated well into merch.
You know who has a strong merch game, Chelsea?
Who?
You.
Oh, that's very sweet.
And you designed merch for Cynthia Nixon's gubernatorial run, and so I think it's time for you to re-up this.
Oh my God. No. See, if she's making coconut tree merch, she has to like go past my level to the best in the game. She has to do the online ceramics collab.
I'm not saying that this would happen, but I do think at the very least an email has gone back and forth about a coconut tree themed Erewhon smoothie.
Also, I'm interested to see the extent in which Beyonce Taylor will campaign for her, because I feel like the moment that Taylor Swift heard that J.D. Vance quote about miserable childless cat ladies, Taylor Swift would have been triggered to a level that you can't even imagine, and she is currently plotting like her reputation style revenge against this man.
Taylor's touring the Eras Tour through the rest of this year, and I think she does have some US dates, so Kamala appearance?
Yeah, maybe at the Florida show, because I don't know if you've seen this, but the Eras Tour begins with this clock and it hits midnight and then Taylor comes out. If it's just Kamala. And then Taylor can serenade her with Miss Americana. Although I think The Man is the most Kamala-coded Taylor song.
It is. And today, the Kamala Harris presidential campaign released their first presidential ad. And would you know it, Chell? Beyonce's Freedom was the soundtrack for it. So I think this is just the beginning of their partnership.
I'm sure.
I also had no idea that Kamala Harris has a house in Brentwood until I was stopped on Sunset Boulevard as like 32 Secret Service SUVs pass by.
Oh, wow.
I need her to move to Washington and stay out of. The traffic is already bad enough in Los Angeles. I was like, oh, no.
This election cycle is fucking crazy, and I can only imagine what will go down between now and November.
Although my hope, and I'm sure our other listeners' hope, is that this is the end of us talking about politics for at least a month.
Let's get back to a canonical topic for us, which is Euphoria and the drama behind the scenes.
So we learned last week that the show is coming back, finally. There's a tentative start date of January 2025. And then just a few days ago, The Hollywood Reporter published a story called What's Ailing Euphoria? Tragedy and Trauma Inside TV's Buzziest Show. And the leading quote that people have taken from this article is the beef that Zendaya has with show creator Sam Levinson, and then Sam Levinson's beef with Zendaya, where Zendaya believes that Sam Levinson took the eye off the ball by focusing on The Idol, a show that he was only supposed to be more of a executive producer, and ended up, as we know and as we've talked about exhaustively on this podcast, reshot half of the show. And I guess Sam Levinson is equally annoyed at Zendaya and saying that actually the Euphoria holdups are because she wants to be a movie star. But if you read the article, which we did, and that's what we're here for, to read these long articles so you don't have to, it reveals a much more tragic story about Sam Levinson's producing partner, Kevin Turin, who he had a breakup, very much like the Jenny Connor, Lena Dunham, post-Girls dissolution of their friendship, where like very little is known what happened, but sadly, Kevin Turin died of a heart attack late last year. And Sam Levinson and his wife were barred from the funeral.
Yes, because they had ended their professional relationship earlier that year. And we're not on good terms.
It is easy to make fun of Sam Levinson. We have. But when you look at the year, the 2023 that Sam Levinson had between the failure of The Idol, his professional relationship and then personal relationship with his friend who then tragically died. It's rough.
He's had a bad year.
He's had a bad year and he's meant to write season 3 of Euphoria. No wonder he pitched that Zendaya should be a private investigator.
Yeah, I don't know what's a worse idea for season 3, Zendaya being a private investigator or her being a surrogate.
It's revealed in this article that the HBO executives brought Zendaya and Sam Levinson in a room to hear what the ideas were for season 3. She off the bat was like, no, I'm not going to be a surrogate or a private investigator. It's really like, what's your third idea? Also, if the third season's set in the future, Chell, there's no way we're ever going to get an answer about the drugs that Zendaya's Rue character took from the creepy drug dealer, who was definitely going to sell her into sexual slavery. And I'm sure even Sam Levinson was like, okay, where this season is going is too dark. I got to pivot and just be like, forget about that.
I don't know. I think that character needs their own spinoff. That's my favorite character on Euphoria. Also, we didn't mention that Angus Cloud also died, contributing to Sam Levinson's terrible year.
You know, the man was flogged for trying to create genius with the idol.
Look, I'm still glad he did it.
Yes, I think we are the biggest fans of the idol.
Not a fan of what he did to Petra Collins.
Because that is also noted in the article that it came to light, this Petra Collins interview, where she was like, yeah, Sam Levinson came up to me before Euphoria and like, your entire worldview, your aesthetics is what is going to inspire the show. I would love for you to direct it. And after she spent a lot of time on the show, he was like, you're too young, you can't do this. Anyway, I'm just basically gonna steal your entire aesthetic.
Well, it wasn't even just that he copied the style of her photographs. It was like she also was instrumental in casting the show. Right. And some of those girls on Euphoria, like Barbie Ferreira, Alexa Demi, it's like those are quite literally her muses. It is very fucked up what he did. And I think that he's lucky that she didn't make more of a stink about it the second that the show came out.
Previous to this article, it seemed as if Zendaya was kind of the singular person keeping Euphoria going. Because I keep being like, why don't they just cancel the show? It's very expensive. But it is the second most watched HBO show, which is probably the reason they are giving him the latitude. Because if it's shooting in 2025, it means it's not coming out till the end of next year or 2026.
They should just change it into an animated series.
I'm sure Sydney Sweeney would be more than happy, as well as Jacob Elordi, to just like roll up in pajamas and lend their voice.
Yeah.
Euphoria animated season 3. And you could keep it in high school.
Shall we get into some And Just Like That news?
Of course, guys.
It appears that they have shot another funeral scene. There were paparazzi photos on the street with everyone in black, Charlotte, Harry, Miranda, Aiden, Carrie.
Not Steve.
Not
Steve.
What, there's like an electrical fire in his Coney Island clam shack and he just goes up in flames?
Guess we're going to have to rewrite that bit in our live show.
I think we're being fooled, Lauren.
Really?
These photos remind me of something, and it is the paparazzi photos of Mr. Big's funeral, which we didn't realize was his funeral at the time.
You're referring to a photo of Chris Noth in a black suit with Sarah Jessica Parker dressed as Carrie in her Mr. Big funeral outfit.
No, she wasn't in the funeral outfit. She was in a completely different outfit with a polka dot skirt, the bird on her head.
Right.
They styled a whole look that wasn't her funeral look. It also kind of reminds me of when Kim Cattrall wore the wedding dress in front of the Pabst when they were filming the Sex and the City movie. Because I don't know if Carrie and Aiden are getting married. I hope to God that they are not getting married. But I'm just saying that Carrie's hair and makeup is completely inconsistent with everything else that she is wearing. Like, this is an insane way to look at a funeral.
Right, because she's wearing a black diaphanous dress, but also leggings.
But she has a white magnolia in her beachy, might I say, very wedding-y hair. I just don't know who would go to a funeral like this. So I think that something else is going on with this scene.
You're making a great point. I don't know if Aiden is wearing Tom Brown in that scene. Either his pants don't fit or he's wearing a Tom Brown suit. But this is my annoyance, which is I don't think 6'5" men should wear that kind of cropped pant Tom Brown style look. That it's how I feel when I see Lee Pace and Tom Brown. I'm like, that is meant for a Justin Theroux sized man.
I don't think this is Tom Brown. I think he's just wearing the cropped pant.
Do you think he's wearing that to his own wedding with Argyle socks? Do you think John Corbett was like, as I previously said on David Spade and Dana Carvey's podcast, I'd like to be more involved in these decisions?
I don't think the cropped trouser is a good look for him. I think the cropped Tom Brown trouser, like, only really works on guys that literally work at Tom Brown. Like, I used to see the Tom Brown guys around Soho when I worked there. Incredible looking men. Gorgeous. But I just don't know how many people in the real world that makes sense on, especially in 2024.
And I maintain it's not for tall men. It is for men who are 5'9 to 5'11.
Yeah, it's for a short king.
If you believe 5'11 is an actual height. Here's an interesting thing. Chell, did you know that there's an In Just Like That subreddit?
No, but I feel like I should.
So a month ago, someone posted, spoiler, check out what they're casting for an upcoming And Just Like That shoot. They were casting background mourners. They were asking for artists, politicians, I guess theater-looking people, and then featured players that would be a row of ex-girlfriends. But the dates that they listed for shooting are June 26th and June 27th. So unless this shoot got pushed back, this is a different scene? Or it is a funeral. A row of ex-girlfriends could be Steve.
I kind of just got the vibe that he maybe picked up some chicks at the bar.
I don't know. I mean, we do know that Daddy MPK is down to clown. He loves shooting alternate scenes. He likes fucking with people. He knows that the paparazzi are out there. So I also realized, because I was looking at the paparazzi images, and there's a shot of Kristen Davis as Charlotte, John Corbett, who's smoking. And I think when we discussed season 2 of And Just Like That, we didn't get into the fact that John Corbett is just a smoker, and that's not an Aiden choice.
Right, right.
I took a look at the End Just Like That Reddit, and holy shit, Chelsea, like, if anyone here thinks we're catty about this show, that is the meanest place I've seen.
Really?
I'm like, why do you even watch the show then? I mean, I'll read some of the stuff.
Sure.
From 3 days ago. Could we stop pretending the styling is good? Does anybody else hate Rock?
I think Lily is the more annoying of the children, personally.
Another thing I wanted to say that lends to your theory about it could be a wedding is, you know who did wear black to their wedding, Chell?
Who?
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, right. Of course. Of course.
We have talked about the Sarah Jessica Parkerization of Carrie Bradshaw's style, and I wouldn't be surprised if her note was like, well, the only way that Carrie's getting married again is wearing black.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
Is it also Aiden's funeral?
Oh my God, I don't even know what's worse.
I don't get it. Like, we saw a scene where Aiden comes back to the Gramercy apartment and is seemingly yelling at the house. And then we saw Logan Marshall Green and was like, good, Aiden's gone and Carrie's gonna date again. But it's like, are they just now 50-somethings in an open relationship where it's like, when I'm in Virginia, like, whatever you get up to, you get up to?
To be fair, the Logan Marshall Green character does look like he would be polyamorous, just based on costuming.
Yeah, his outfit is giving, you can find me on Field. All right, another thing that occurred in this past week is, for whatever reason, this was going around the internet that it was all but confirmed that Kim Cattrall was going to be in season 3 of And Just Like That.
I am so sick of my feed being clogged up with this kind of garbage.
Well, you know how I also know it's bullshit? Because it came from Life and Style magazine. It's widely believed that the actress would play a significant role and that the series was just waiting for the right time to announce it. There's no way that this is possible. And I love that, like, it reached this fever pitch on Sunday and somehow got to Kim Cattrall's Twitter and she just replied, oh, that's so kind, but I'm not.
If Kim Cattrall was returning, I don't think they would hide it. I think that they would lean into the publicity they could get from the paparazzi photos.
If that is indeed a funeral scene, I hope it is not for Samantha. And then lastly, Blair Underwood, who was promoting the film Long Legs, which we'll get into in a second, because until I saw the movie Longlegs, had no idea he's essentially the second lead. But of course, because everything comes back to Sex and the City, someone asked him if he would appear in Just Like That. And he said, that's something I'm definitely open to. And then said, it's time. He's too good for In Just Like That. I don't want that for him. Unless it is a scene where he learns that Steve and Miranda broke up and he starts hysterically laughing.
See, I don't think he needs to come back and have a whole ass arc. But I do think it would be funny if Miranda was like on a bad date with a woman. And then she runs into Blair Underwood and it's just awkward. Like, I think we can do fan service without having to have multi-episode arcs and like a world of side characters around that person.
Yeah, they used to be able to do that on Sex and the City. Let's move on to two movies we've seen. I know it's been a few weeks, but we finally saw Longlegs and Maxine. I'm just going to say it now. Guys, we are going to have a very spoiler-filled conversation about these two movies. We've waited weeks.
Well, what did you think of Longlegs?
I think I saw it when it just, the film was just so hyped up. And I think Neon, who released it, did an incredible job marketing this film. But it was also marketed as, like, the scariest movie, people vomiting, freaking the fuck out. There was that ad where, you know, the lead actress, when she saw Nicolas Cage as Longlegs for the first time, she was mic'd up and her heart rate jumped up. And so I was like, all right, I'm ready to have the shit scared out of me. And then it was like, oh.
See, I thoroughly enjoyed this film, but it's not scary.
It's not scary. It might be more of a comedy, question mark.
Yeah, it's not scary unless you're scared by that portrait of Bill Clinton that is somehow in every scene of Longlegs.
Yes, Longlegs is a period piece, something that was shocking to me. Film is set in 1993.
Which is why the Bill Clinton portrait is so prominent.
For those who do not know what this film is, according to IMDb, FBI agent Lee Harker, great name, by the way, is assigned to an unsolved serial killer case that takes an unexpected turn, revealing evidence of the occult. Harker discovers a personal connection to the killer and must stop him before he strikes again. I will say up front, love that it deals with the paranormal. Like, I am tired of horror films where it's like, is something supernatural going on or is it mental illness? From the jump, they're like, no, there's supernatural stuff. Because essentially, in the first scene, you learn that Lee is a psychic and the FBI has kind of a psychic division. She's given a Blade Runner Voight Kampff test of some kind after she's able to correctly predict, just based on vibes, where a serial killer is.
Yeah, who was the lead? She was great.
Her name is Micah Monroe. She's the kind of the new Scream Queen. She popped from It Follows. She was in a film in 2022 I still haven't seen called Watcher.
Sounds up our alley.
And now this. I feel like antisocial females is underrepresented in cinema. I loved her for that.
Absolutely.
Might she go on our list of glamorous women having nervous breakdowns?
I don't think she's glamorous enough.
Ooh, but she does have a very fucked up relationship with her mother.
Yes, her mother, played by Alicia Witt, who I haven't seen in anything in ages. She was like the redheaded it girl of our youth. She was Sybil Shepherd's daughter in Sybil, which is how I think I first found out about her. She was an urban legend. And she was in this movie that I used to be obsessed with called Fun, which you have never seen.
It felt like not the best moment of our friendship when you sent me that. You were like, remember this film? I haven't seen it forever. And I had to be like, I've never seen this movie, Chelsea.
To be fair, it was an obscure independent film. But Alicia Witt, I forget who the other lead was. They basically play these fucked up teenage girls, like juvenile delinquents that just like kill this elderly woman for fun. It's very Heavenly Creatures, but if Heavenly Creatures was more 90s and like grunge.
All right. Yeah, that does seem like a film you would have loved as a teenager. Yeah. Should we get into Nicolas Cage's Longlegs?
He didn't look very tall.
Oh, there's no truth in this art. He's not Longlegs.
My first thought wasn't like, damn, his legs are long.
Well, the writer-director Osgood Perkins, who is 6'4", is giving more Longlegs than the titular Longlegs.
Yeah.
I saw the film a couple of days after it came out, and there was already this backlash of like, is Longlegs transphobic? And I was like, oh, what is this about? Why would people be saying this? And then the reveal of Nicolas Cage as Longlegs.
Yes, I did not know about that discourse prior to seeing this film, but I was kind of shocked when his character was first revealed, because he's wearing prosthetics that makes it look like he's gotten facial feminization surgery. And even though this character's gender identity is very much not discussed, it does feel like a throwback to Dress to Kill or Silence of the Lambs or one of the many homicidal trans women horror movies.
So for those who have not seen the film, don't like scary movies, but do like the Real Housewives franchise, the best that I can explain is that Nicolas Cage as Longlegs looks like Vicky Gundelson from The Real Housewives of Orange County.
It's also giving Marilyn Manson in the I don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me video.
What's weird is in interviews that I've read after the fact, Nicolas Cage has been like, oh, my character got plastic surgery to make themselves more attractive for the devil. None of that is imbued in the film. And what's also weird is that there is a multitude of flashbacks. So it's like, I needed a flashback where Nicolas Cage's Longlegs is at like a dentist's office trying to get fucked up plastic surgery.
Yeah, we need a little more context. It felt to me like they wanted it to be a trans woman character, but they knew that they couldn't because that would be problematic in 2024. So they're like, let's just make this character really into glam rock.
It has a very strong first and second act. In the third act, I just feel like it goes a little bit off of the rails. And Longlegs is a messenger of the devil who is a doll maker. The killer Longlegs is a family annihilator, except that, like, the fathers always kill everyone in the family. The Lee Harker character is realizing all of this math and science, where it's like, the girls are born on the 14th, but these murders either happen 6 days before or 6 days after the birthday. And that this, like, triangular pentagram that she creates amongst all the dates that this has happened over the decade, she's like, we need this to happen. The next murder is going to happen on the 13th to complete this cycle. Got it. Great. But then Osgood Perkins was like, oh, the devil's doing this just to like fuck with people. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's the case then, and we're not like opening a portal to hell or whatever, I don't think then there's going to be this much math involved if the devil is just fucking with people to have fun. Okay? That's my issue with the movie.
Yeah, but you kind of just have to accept it for what it is and its own crazy logic.
I get it. I get it.
Also, I think for a little bit of context, I think we should mention Osgood Perkins' Nepo baby status. He has perhaps the most tragic Nepo baby status of anyone I have ever heard of, which is that his father is Anthony Perkins, another iconic trans-coded homicidal maniac in Psycho who died of AIDS when he was a teenager. His mother died in the September 11th attacks. His mother was Barry Berenson, granddaughter of Elsa Schiaparelli, sister of Marissa Berenson, model, etc.
I read an interview with Osgood Perkins where he was discussing that there is this generational lie between a mother and a daughter, and how that is a reflection of his own childhood and a coded way of discussing the fact that his mother kept his father's true sexuality from him until his father, yes, died of AIDS. And this film takes place a year after his father died. His father died in 1992. This film takes place in 1993.
Barry Berenson dies in 2001, like less than a decade. That's so fucked up.
Yes, Osgood Perkins has a brother named Elvis Perkins who released an album in 2007 that I love, and it was called Ash Wednesday. When asked about why it's called Ash Wednesday, it's because his father died on a Tuesday, and his mother died on a Tuesday, and all they were left with on Wednesday were ashes. So the fact that these two people can make succinct, beautiful art at all, a testament. The more I watch movies and the more that movie discourse has gotten crazier and crazier thanks to the internet, you either have to go with it or not. And at the end, I was just like, I don't love this. I don't love this explanation.
I don't know. To me, it combined a lot of horror tropes that I really enjoy. Creepy dolls, psychotic nuns, serial killers, and the whole sort of Silence of the Lambs type finding of the serial killer.
I was shocked how inspired the film was from Silence of the Lambs, between like a socially awkward FBI agent to a trans-coded serial killer character. I was like, oh wow, I didn't realize it was gonna be this similar. Guys, we had to pause the podcast for a second so Chelsea could get an additional Diet Coke. What happened?
Okay, speaking of Silence of the Lambs, getting this Diet Coke kind of did make me feel like I was in the Buffalo Bill house because of the sheer amount of doors I have to go through to get to where we are.
Well, also like Silence of the Lambs, we have to close all of the fucking doors and we are in the closet to record so that my little white dog doesn't fuck up the recording by barking.
Your very own Precious.
My Precious. All right, before we get into Maxine, I did want to talk about this quote that Osgood Perkins gave where he shits on Ty West. Osgood Perkins is saying that he doesn't watch modern horror films. So he says, I wouldn't say I'm someone who likes or dislikes horror movies. I just don't see new ones. I have no interest. I'll never see Maxine. I'll never see Pearl. I saw X for reasons. It wasn't on purpose. I don't see contemporary things. Very weird that he names not one, not two, but three Ty West films that are all set in the past. I understand his point about contemporary horror films. I get it. He's saying it because they were made in the last few years, but it's weird that he wouldn't mention Jordan Peele, who makes contemporary horror films that are set in present day.
Yeah, like Pearl is literally set in the 1910s.
And it would be one thing if Long Legs was set in contemporary times. It's like, you too are making a contemporary movie set in the past, so what are we doing here? I think that Osgood Perkins maybe didn't mention Jordan Peele because looking at his IMDb, Chell, he was in Nope. He plays the movie director at the beginning of the film when Kiki Palmer and Daniel Kaluuya come in with the horse.
Oh, yeah.
He's the director of that.
Shade.
Now, having seen Maxine, I feel like Osgood Perkins gave this quote because he did not like how much the Psycho Mansion features in Maxine. And the reference to like, oh yeah, they made a sequel to that movie a couple of years ago. I'm sure he was like, fuck you. Because I believe Osgood Perkins plays a young Norman Bates in Psycho 2.
Very meta. Okay, I'm a little confused by all the Maxine hate.
I know. I will say that definitely my viewing experience of Long Legs was influenced by the hype and seeing it as soon as it came out. We waited a few weeks to see Maxine, and I feel like the hype sort of dissipated. But what I had heard as well was like, I don't know, the third act, everything completely falls apart. But I fucking loved it.
I know, like everyone I know hates Maxine.
Pearl is the best film of the trilogy. That's fine. But Maxine, probably my second favorite. X, third.
I don't know. I might like X better, but it doesn't mean that Maxine isn't good.
You know what? They're like children. They're all great for different reasons.
But I will say the murder mystery part of Maxine to me is the least interesting thing about Maxine. Like, I actually don't really care about the central plot that much. What I more care about is like the in and outs of Maxine's daily life and her attempt to break into Hollywood and all of that stuff.
Yeah, and if people need to be murdered for us to get that, then so be it. But friend of the show, Jessica Glasscock, was like, you can tell who the murderer is from like a mile away. And that's when I went, wait, is she not the murderer? Like, for some reason in the recesses of my brain, I thought that was going to be the thing. That, like, she's trying to break into Hollywood, but also she's got to kill people every once in a while.
Yeah, I'm surprised she isn't crazier after the events that transpired in X.
Coming off of watching the Faye Dunaway documentary, where her son was like, she's able to be that good because her life was that traumatic. I think Maxine might be an A-list actor. Like, I think in the... In the world of Maxine, I think that she market corrects Meryl Streep in the 90s.
The first scene of Maxine is absolutely brilliant, which is her at a casting call for some low budget horror movie.
How dare you? It's The Puritan 2 and it's going to be Elizabeth Debicki's art, okay?
Her audition is so major.
It's great. And then it's immediately followed up with, can we see your tits?
Perfect. And then her walking past the line of girls that are auditioning, being like, y'all can just leave.
I fucking nailed it. And then she hops in the most beautiful Chelsea's dream car, a 1980s Mercedes two-seater convertible. And I was like, ooh, I love this idea that she's trying to break into Hollywood. But as noted in the beginning of the film and throughout the film, she's a very successful and maybe the most famous porn star of the mid-80s. And it's like, great. And she's thriving. She's got this Mercedes. And then she proceeds to drive to her shithole Hollywood Boulevard apartment. And I was like, the math is not mathing.
She either has to have like a reasonably nice apartment, or they have to explain that she got the car from like a sugar daddy or something.
I'm not saying that it stopped me from enjoying the film, but it is something that I thought about every time she either got in her car or opened the gate off of Hollywood Boulevard to her terrible apartment.
Another thing I really loved about this film were the references to X and Pearl, specifically when she was sitting at her vanity and like there's the giant ceramic goose filled with cocaine.
Chelsea and I saw this movie together. We were just with a very fun audience who, when she did the coke out of the gigantic swan, everyone started laughing.
Goose.
Goose? Sorry.
It's a goose. It's the Pearl goose.
Oh.
Now it's clicking.
Guys, I don't want comments about like, you don't understand with long legs. The devil's actually seen 60 times in different ways in the film. I get it. Okay. I just didn't vibe with that frequency. The Maxine frequency, all in.
Okay, but you know who was kind of off in Maxine? Kevin Bacon.
You didn't fuck with Kevin Bacon?
I feel like that could have been more major. I fucked with his death. Sorry, spoiler alert. In life, I don't know. I was more into Funky Tasting Spunk.
Also known as Bobby Cannavale, playing a cop.
He has cop face.
He has cop face. He also certainly has like 1980s LAPD detective face. Yeah. You know, I appreciate this era that Kevin Bacon is in where it's like he's been the hot guy for so long. And it's not that he isn't hot anymore.
Well, he was not hot in this movie.
But I feel like he's finally aged into just like kooky character actor where it's like I no longer have to bear the brunt of being a leading man. Like that's for Glenn Powell. I'm just now like down to clown and I can just be a sleazy private investigator with a foghorn, leghorn accent and die in the most horrific way.
Okay, fair point.
Next month for the VIP episode, I think we should rewatch Wild Things.
Okay. I mean, maybe. It's been a long time since I've seen Wild Things.
His whole vibe was giving me Wild Things, which is a film that Kevin Bacon produced. He plays a cop in it.
We see his dick in it.
Yeah. And it has like psychotic energy. Also, I have not seen a lot of people discuss the fact that Maxine is giving Scream 3 as well.
Oh my god, yes. This is his version of Scream.
Ty West.
Yes.
For those who don't remember Scream 3, the overarching plot is how Sidney Prescott's mom was an actress who was sexually assaulted by a film director, film producer. They had a son that became Scott Foley, who decided to become a famous film director, so famous that he could direct the Stab film series. But then you also learn that he's actually the engineer of Skeet Ulrich and Matthew Lillard. He's actually the one that showed Skeet Ulrich that his mom was cheating and whispered in their ears to kill Sidney Prescott's mom.
Scream 3 was crazy, but they recovered in Scream 4.
Why Scream 3 is so bonkers is because it was a whole different plot where actually you were going to learn that Matthew Lillard was alive and was in prison and was influencing others to be copycat killers. But after Columbine happened, they completely cut that, which is why we have the bonkers Scream 3 plot.
Well, Maxine is also Scream-esque because of the video store aspect of it. It's murders, it's fashion. It's very Stranger Things adjacent. It seeks to capture the 80s, not as they actually were, but as they were in movies from the 80s.
Yeah, Ty West is someone that watched like Roger Corman, Grindhouse, films of that time period that took place on Hollywood Boulevard and recreated it. And even though in Los Angeles we completely kill our history and tear down buildings, the one nice thing about Hollywood Boulevard, whether it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Maxine, you can make it look like any time period from the last 60 years.
Yeah, it's true.
We also haven't discussed how major the actress Elizabeth Debicki is in. She played Princess Diana, and she is also a female director of this horror breakout film, The Puritan 2.
Yeah, I think The Puritan 2 got a theatrical release.
It did, because Maxine's on the red carpet. That's why I retracted my statement.
Her vibe, her look, the costuming in this film is incredible, but on her character specifically.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion on that because, as we've discussed on the podcast, you walked out of Atomic Blonde because another film that was supposedly set in the 80s that had terrible, not period-specific production design and costume design. This felt very legit.
And glamorous and fab.
It really hit all the Hollywood landmarks. You had Hollywood Boulevard, you had the backlots.
The Hollywood sign.
A set piece of bodies being found at Hollywood Forever, although they call it something else. Did I ever tell you that when I was a teenager, my friends and I used to have picnics at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery?
That's just what alternative people did.
I know, but there was one time where a real funeral was going on and we felt awful.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
And we're like, God, should we leave? And all we hear is, cut? It was a film scene. It wasn't an actual funeral that was going on. It was like Monk or something was shooting.
That's amazing.
I think the only thing left to discuss is the uncomfortable fact that Mia Goth is married to Shia LaBeouf.
Look, love is love, you know?
He loves her enough not to show up to the Ty West premieres.
Well, she's amazing. Truly amazing. A pleasure to watch in all of these movies. Just obsessed with her.
I know. The sad thing is there's not going to be a fourth film. Like, let me see her in her quote-unquote 40s out Meryl Streeping Meryl Streep.
I don't know. It could continue at some point. We didn't think this would be a trilogy.
Well, I saw Twisters over the weekend, but you did not.
I will see it, though. I want
to
see it.
I encourage Chelsea to see it in a 4DX theater. Not that I've ever been to a 4DX theater, but Chelsea was unaware what this is. And it is a theater where everything that's going on screen, they simulate for you. So if there's water, they spray you with mist. You know, with Twisters, it's like they rock your seat back and forth. I think Tat will lose her mind in the best way.
Okay, I'm down. I'm down to have this experience. I'll report back.
All right, guys. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.